striking steel against the whetstone. It was a fast-growth forest here, soft wood that rose quickly and collapsed. No centuries-old copperwood here, just black-barked Idiot Trail and the spiral-trunked God's Arm oaks. It would be easy to find fallen branches and double handfuls of moss analogues to use for tinder. The question was how many trips back to the raft he wanted to make before they set out. If it was raining upstream, and it was clearly raining upstream, the runoff could raise the level of the river any time. It might already be running high. If they were lucky, the extra runoff might cut over some of the bends and give them a straighter path to the south. Lost in his calculations, Ramon didn't realize what he was looking at until he felt the fear start his heart beating hard and fast. There, in the soft ground, were fresh prints as wide as his two hands together, a four-lobed paw with deep-dug claw marks. Chupacabra! Somewhere nearby was a fucking chupacabra! He dropped the branches held in his arms and turned to run back to the river, but he hadn't made it halfway before he skidded around a stand of close-knit God's Arm oaks and found the beast itself, glaring at him with what seemed like equal parts hunger and hatred. The mouth hung open, the thick split tongue lolling out of it. Its teeth were yellowed and sharp as daggers. Ramon froze, and the black, rage-filled eyes met his. He braced himself for death, but the thing didn't attack. Even then, knowing something was wrong, it took the space of 5 fast breaths together before he noticed the flattening in the animal's neck ruff, the fleshy, rope-like thing buried in the chupacabra's neck. A Sahel. He let his gaze move past the chupacabra to the form looming behind it. Beaten, battered, slashed across its chest and legs, Manek still stood at its full, towering height. Its wounded eye had gone black and oozed a noxious ichor. But the uninjured one remained the hot orange Ramon remembered. The alien's arms waved for a moment, gently as kelp under the sea. When it spoke, its deep, half-sorrowful voice was perfectly familiar. "You have done well," it said. Chapter 22
"What the fuck?" Ramon said through a tight throat. "You're dead. You died."
The alien shifted its head. The quills rose slightly and fell again.
"What you say is Aubrey. I am not dead, as you can see," Manek said. "Your task was to engage in flow as the man would. You have done so in accordance with your Tata Croida. My own function was compromised for a time, but has now returned to its proper channel."
"How did you find me?"
"The river flows south. You are constrained by the river," Manek said. "This is a strange question."
"But we were traveling faster than you. We could have been on the other bank of the river. You couldn't know we'd be here."
"I could not reach you farther down the river than I could go. I could not reach you on the river's opposite bank. Therefore, I went where I could go, that you could as well. You suggest things that are not the case. This is Aubrey. You must cease to express Aubrey."
The chupacabra emitted a low growl, its body shifting and restless, but constrained. There were scorch marks along the beast's side where Manek had shot it. The fur had burned away and left wide streaks of reddened, blistered flesh. Manek had given, it seemed, as good as it got. The Sahel pulsed twice, the bruised flesh engorging like a worm's. Ramon felt a passing ghost of sympathy for the chupacabra. At least when he had suffered the thing in his neck, he'd understood what was happening. He wondered how many times Manek had punished the chupacabra before it had understood that it was no longer its own master. and how many tricks the alien had been able to teach it. "So," he said, with a bravado he didn't feel, "what have you got planned now? You can't just kill the poor fucker." Manek paused again.
"You are not accurate," it said. "The man must not know of us. The illusion of his knowledge will be corrected. You have proved yourself an apt tool. That will be expressed. The man is by the water now. We must approach him quickly."
"They're here," Ramon said. "The Eaters of the Young. Those are their ships overhead. What if they're watching? What if they see you?"
Manek seemed to hesitate, but it might only have been Ramon's overwhelming desire that made it seem so. The alien head bobbed.
"They do that, you know," Ramon went on. "They have sensors. Eyes. Last time they came through, the governor asked them to help find a kid that got lost out on the Tierra Hueso. And they did it. Took them a couple hours, and they told us exactly where the little pendejo was. How do you know they're not watching me right now? Tracking me because of that man I killed. You go out there where they can see you and kill him. They'll see the energy blast. And you think they'll mistake that for a tree falling or something? They'll know."
It was the purest line of bullshit Ramon had ever spun. Manek wouldn't need to fire an energy blast to kill the other man. Not with a fucking attack chupacabra on a leash, ready to do whatever it was told. For that matter, Manek was strong enough to wring the man's neck like a chicken's, with its bare hands, without any other help at all. But he didn't have the leash in his neck to tell Manek what his intentions were anymore, or help it judge when he was lying. If the alien didn't believe him, the worst it could do was kill him. He waited, chest thrust out like he was spoiling for a fight. Manek shifted its body from side to side. The chupacabra whined.
"What better course do you recommend?" Manek asked.
"You let me go back to him," Ramon said. "You stay right here. You get it? Right here. I'll think of a reason for him to come back with me here. Under the trees, where they won't see you. Get it? Then you can correct whatever fucking illusion you want."
"Because," he didn't say, "we'll be on that raft again and out of here while you're still standing around like the ugly girl at a dance." Manek was quiet and still as stone for the length of 3 slow breaths.
"Why would you do this?" the alien asked at last.
"It's my Tata Kreuda, monster. I'm supposed to help you track him down, right? Well, here I am, helping."
"No,"
Manek said, and its voice seemed almost relieved.
"Your function was to behave as the man would. You are attempting deceit."
"So what do you think the man would do then?" Ramon demanded, the despair blooming in his chest, expressing itself in rage. "I'm trying to save my own skin. You think he wouldn't give up fucking anyone to help himself out?"
"No," the alien said. "He would not. You have performed your function. I must now..."
The shriek was high and squeaked at the end, like a little girl's cry of alarm or delight. All eyes, Ramon's, Manek's, the chupacabra's, shifted. The man stood in the path behind Ramon. His face was pale and bloodless as marble.
"This is in accordance," Manek said. "The flow brings him down the specific path. You are sometimes excellent creatures. I suspect it is your ignorance that..." "The man? Where is he going? You will restrain him. You will do so immediately."
"Stay there! Stay there! Stay there!" Ramon shouted over his shoulder as he bolted off after the other man.
The alien likely wouldn't remain where it was, but even if it only paused for a moment, it was a moment more than they'd had. As soon as he thought Manek could no longer hear him, he turned all his energy and attention to just running. If he could get to the raft, get out onto the river, they could still outpace the bastard. They could still get away. If only Ramon hadn't built a lean-to. If the Pinche River could have kept its waterfalls to itself. If anything that had made them pause in the journey hadn't happened, Ramon wouldn't have been crashing through the forest, lifting his legs high to clear brush and roots and stones. The alien and its new pet chupacabra close behind. He found himself calling out to the man, his twin, who was already so far ahead that Ramon couldn't see him. "Go!" he shouted. "Run! Go, you bastard!" If he could just reach the river. Ramon reached the river. The water was fierce, and the roar of the cataract louder than he remembered it. The other man was nowhere Ramon could see. And where the raft had been, deep, muddy furrows angled down the bank. It took a moment for him to believe it. Powered by mortal fear, desperation, and panic, the other man had somehow managed to launch the raft by himself, something Ramon wouldn't have believed possible. He ran out, his feet sinking into the mud, cold water soaking his knees and thighs. There, 5 meters out from the bank, and 10 or more from where he stood, the raft bobbed on the rushing water. His twin crouched at the helm. Ramon could see his wide, fear-rounded eyes. "Stop!" he shouted. "Get back here! Stop!" The man on the raft waved, a wide, frantic gesture that carried no meaning. Ramon spat out a stream of invective, wading uncertainly out into the water. When he looked over his shoulder, Manek and the Chupacabra were just coming into sight, slowed only slightly by the cumbersome leash and Manek's wounds. Ramon lifted a hand to the alien, his palm out, a gesture that was intended to mean, "It's okay, I've got it." And then, before waiting for the alien's response, he took a deep breath and dove. His robe soaked through in an instant, but he didn't stop to shed it. Under the water's surface, the river seemed misty. Tiny bubbles from the cataract and floating silt conspired to hide anything at more than a meter's distance. Arms and legs flailing, Ramon struck out for where he thought the raft would be. The man, like him, was at the mercy of the water, Ramon told himself. They'd be pulled along at the same rate. All he had to do was make up the distance. The turbulence was hard, though, and Ramon felt the water buffeting him as he fought to rise up for air. "Motherfucker!" he shouted as his head broke the surface, and his mouth filled with water before he could say more. The raft was closer, but not as near as Ramon had hoped. A blast of energy lit the air, Manek firing from the shore. The man yelped and started working the oar as Ramon took another breath and dove again. Maybe Manek would hit the son of a bitch and solve Ramon's problems for him. The cold here was unpleasant, but not the vicious, deadly chill it had been farther upriver. Maybe they were farther south than Ramon had thought. Or maybe there was warmer water from rain swelling the flow, as he'd expected. The water above him glowed twice more as Manek fired. So at least the raft was still that close. A swirl in the gloom warned him a moment before he struck a wave of powerful turbulence, the water hitting him in the gut with the power of a fist. He lost his air, the bubbles rising awkwardly as he clawed his way after them. The river was definitely faster. Already, Manek seemed like a tiny figure on the distant shore. Inexplicably, the Chupacabra was loping down the bank, free of the Sahel, and running like all the demons of hell were after it. Ramon spat and bobbed, trying to find his twin on the raft. The other man had drawn farther out into the river and was yelling something, his face flushed almost purple and his mouth gaping wide. Ramon couldn't tell if the asshole was yelling at him, or at Manek, or at God. Manek seemed to have given up the shooting match, so Ramon didn't dive again. He broke into a crawl, kicking at the waves, lifted by them. Tossed. Slowly, the raft drew near, and then the river drove them apart and brought them near again. The other man was on his knees now, the oar extended out into the water. He was still shouting. Ramon couldn't yet make out words, but the man's expression was more nearly one of encouragement now. "Too little, too late, cabrón," he thought, but reached for the oar all the same. His fingers grazed it, the coarse grain of the wood feeling improbably solid after struggling in the water. He pushed again, surging forward, catching it in both hands and pulling it close to his body. He felt the tug as the man pulled him in toward the raft, but Ramon let himself hang limp, his arms and legs tingling with exhaustion. Let the little coward son of a bitch do some of the work. It was less than a minute before the man's hand touched Ramon's shoulder. The raft was right before him. Ramon raised his arm, throwing it onto the laced branches. He pulled, and the other man helped, dragging him up. Ramon lay on the raft's leafy deck, his sodden robe heavy as lead, his lungs working like bellows. "Fuck," the other man said. "I thought you weren't going to make it there, S.A." "Thanks," Ramon thought, but didn't have the energy to say. "Bastard son of a bitch tracked us," the man said, returning to the oar and the river. "I thought you said the chupacabra killed him." "I thought it did," Ramon said, sitting up. He belched. It tasted of silt. "Manek used the Sahel on the poor fucker. He enslaved it. Never thought I'd feel sorry for a chupacabra. Did we get any firewood at all before?" He looked up at the man, his twin, and saw horror on the familiar face. Ramon blinked, looking back over his shoulder. He expected anything. Manek walking on the water like some alien Christ. Another wall of cataract mist. Even the European back from hell with the devil at his side. There was nothing. Gray river, stormy sky, waves with tiny touches of white. He looked back at the man. The oar was forgotten in his hand, his face a mask of fear. "What?" Ramon said, then looked down. His robe had fallen open. His belly was in the light, the thick, ropey scar livid against the brown of his skin. "Oh, that!" "Jesus Christ," the other whispered. "You're me!" He was staring at him in frozen horror. "Calm down," Ramon said. "I can explain." "What are you?" the man shouted. "What the fuck are you?" The man had drawn the knife. Lightning lit the world, flashing from the naked blade. A crackling detonation of thunder. Ramon rose to his feet, unsteady on the tilting raft. "What the fuck are you?" There was hysteria in the man's voice now. He dropped the oar. It was floating away, a prisoner of the river. "Listen to me. Would you stop being such a little pissant and fucking listen to me?" Ramon said, then looking at the man's eyes, eyes he'd seen in the mirror his whole life, he sighed. "Fuck it. Never mind." There was no point. This wasn't a talking fight anymore. Chapter 23. 2.5 meters by 2.5 meters. The space complicated by the fire pit, the lean-to. This was the kind of fight that didn't last long. Ramon pulled off the sodden robe and wound it around one arm, scuttling to get the lean-to between them. Going into a knife fight naked didn't make him happy, but with the full robe wrapped around his forearm, he had something he could block with. And his twin had to hold the blade in his left hand, where Ramon could use his right. They weren't evenly matched. Not close. Ramon was going to lose. The other man went into a low crouch, the knife at the ready. There was nothing. If there had been some firewood, he might have been able to grab a branch and use it as a club. If the oar hadn't floated off into the darkening gray, he might have used it like a staff. "You led them here!" the other man shouted. "I didn't!" "Lying sack of shit!" the man yelled. "You're one of them! You're a monster!" "Yes, yes I am, and I'm still a better man than you!" "Monster!" Ramon didn't bother to answer. The man had made up his mind, just the way Ramon would have in his place. The one thing he understood was that there was no reason, no explanation, no perspective he could bring to this that would make the ending any different from what it was going to be.
"You're a fucking coward, you know that?" Ramon said, hoping to enrage his twin into making a mistake. "You're a pussy! Elena's a waste of air, and you know it! Don't fucking talk about her! You were in love with that cook, Liana, the one you stole from Martin Casals, and you don't even have the fucking balls to say so. You hang on to Elena because you're scared not to, because without her, you know you aren't part of anything or anyone. You're just some pendejo with a third-class van and some prospecting tools." Rage flushed the other man's face. Ramon bent his knees, center of gravity low, ready to dodge in whatever direction he needed to. Except back. There was no raft left behind him. "You don't know shit. I know everything." "Come on, bitch," Ramon said. "You want to dance? Fine. Come on. I'll fuck you up and shit you out." The man swung wild, the raft rocking with his shifting weight. Ramon sidestepped and turned, throwing a kick that connected with empty air. The man swung around in a lower stance now. They'd done little more than trade places. The knife was held sideways before him in a defensive block. The anger had drained out of the other man. His eyes were slitted and cold. That wasn't good. If he'd been possessed by fear and blind rage, Ramon would have had a chance. If the bastard was thinking, then Ramon had just become the European. The man feinted left and then right, his eyes locked on Ramon's, testing him. Ramon danced back, his feet finding the rough edge of the raft. The man swung, and Ramon dove into the attack, getting under and past the knife before it could score him. The raft creaked and bucked, making them both stumble, but the man was the first to regain his feet. Another stroke of lightning flashed. Thunder came almost before the glow had faded. Ramon grinned. His twin did as well. Whatever else, however bad this was, there was still a certain joy in it.
"Under what circumstances do you kill?"
"When the motherfucker needs to die." Ramon took a careful swing with his unarmored hand, then dodged quickly when the knife flickered up to block him. The other man thrust low, leaving a shallow cut on Ramon's leg, just above the knee. It was nothing. He forgot about it. They circled awkwardly, Ramon bouncing gently on the balls of his feet. A light rain began, making the ice root leaves beneath them slick. The other man gathered himself for a rush, the subtle bunching of his shoulders giving his intentions away. Ramon jumped, making the raft shift crazily. The man slipped to one knee, and then rose again immediately.
"You killed him because you thought it would make them like you," Ramon shouted.
"What?"
"You killed the pinche European because you thought all those people in the El Rey would think you were a fucking hero. You're pathetic."
"Fuck you, monster," the other man said, and swung. It was what had to happen. Ramon didn't give himself time to think. He jumped forward, letting the blade skate across his ribs, pinning the man's arm against his side. Pain shrieked as the knife touched bone, but the man couldn't pull back to stab again. Ramon used his free hand to grab the man's injured hand and squeeze. His twin grunted with pain and tried to pull back. They wrestled together in a drunken embrace. This close, he could smell the other man, a rank, musky, unwashed reek that he found amazingly unpleasant. His breath huffed into Ramon's face like a blast of foul air, stinking of dead meat. Ramon kept the blade arm pinned against his side, but the other man lost his footing, and they slid to the deck together. Rain and river water splashed over them. Something struck the raft, and it spun crazily. There was no oar to stabilize them, and no oarsman.
"You shouldn't be alive, you fucking abomination," the man hissed. "You shouldn't be alive."
"The thing is, you don't understand flow," Ramon said, in a strangely conversational tone, as if they were having a beer together in a bar somewhere.
"You don't understand what it is to be part of something bigger.
And Ramon, you poor bastard, you aren't ever going to know either." Then,
He butted his head into the bridge of his twin's nose. He could feel the bone give way, and the man yelped and pulled back. Ramon stuck with him, and they rolled. The little lean-to dug into Ramon's back, and then gave way with a snap. They turned once, both trying to regain their feet, the man refusing to release the knife, Ramon refusing to release his twin. Together, they fell into the water. Ramon gasped, despite himself, and earned a throatful of river water. The other thrashed and twisted, and then they were apart, floating, floating in a bright, flowing river. Ramon noticed the red bloom that came from his side, his blood mixing with the water, becoming a part of it. He was becoming the river. It would have been easy to let it happen. The living sea called to him, and part of him wanted very much to join it, to become the river completely. But the part of him that was alien remembered the threatened sorrow of Gesu, and the human part of him refused to be beaten, and together the two parts of himself forced him on. He shifted and kicked against the flow with all his strength, the heat and blood pouring out of him. In the raging flow of the river, the one who lived would be the one who found the raft first. He kicked, spiraling in the flow. The water around him was like a veil of pink. His blood. The thought flickered through his mind. How bad did he get me? And was gone. There wasn't time. He found the raft, a darkness on the water, and swam toward it. In the corner of his eye, he saw the other man flailing. A thick length of vine had come loose from the raft and was snaking its way across the surface. Ramon gritted his teeth and pushed. Now. He could make it there now. He shot up from the water, his arms slamming down on the top of the raft. The other man was to his left, also crawling up, his breath a plume of water and spit. A branch caught on something. Ramon thought it was his robe until he remembered that the cloth was all wrapped around his arm. The wood had caught a flap of his own torn skin. The other man was almost on the raft. Ramon pulled his leg up, his ankle on the top, and pulled, desperately hauling himself up. The loose vine slid past his back, bumping him like a water snake. The rain felt like a thousand tiny blows. And he was up. He was on the raft again. He rolled over, and the man dropped a foot heavily onto Ramon's chest, pinning him. His twin was breathing like he'd just run a 4-minute mile. His hair clung to his scalp like lichen on a stone, and his mouth was a pale grin surrounded by blood from his broken nose. Teeth like yellowed bone. Ramon tried to catch his breath, but the pressure from the man's foot prevented him. He felt the grin on his own face. "You got something to say before you die, monster?" his twin demanded. "Sure," Ramon said, then fought to inhale. "You know what, Ramon?" "What?" Ramon wheezed out a laugh. "You don't like yourself very much." Time took the strangely powerless and dreamlike slowness that accompanies moments of horror and trauma. Ramon took pleasure in tracking the reactions as they made their way across the man's face. Surprise, followed by confusion, confusion by embarrassment, embarrassment by a rage that towered over Ramon like summer thunderheads dwarfed the mountains, and all of it in less than 2 beats of his racing heart. The blade drew back, prepared for the strike that would open Ramon's throat. As he raised his arms against it, Ramon thought of the marks on bones and skin that came from dying men's attempts to fend off steel with flesh. This was how those marks were made, and there was nothing more he could do now than show whatever imagined coroner ever looked over his mortal remains that he'd put up hell's own fight. Ramon was screaming, pure animal rage drowning out fear and the hopelessness of his effort, when the loose vine reared up from the water like a pale serpent, wires sparking and hissing in the place where its head would have been. The man jumped back. The The killing stroke became an awkward parry as the Sahel lunged at him. Ramon rolled until he was almost at the raft's edge, then looked up. The Sahel had wrapped itself twice around his twin's leg, once around his belly, and was pressing its maw toward the man's neck. Ramon's twin had both hands gripping the Sahel, struggling to hold it away from himself. The muscles in the man's arms were bulging and quivering. Ramon half expected to hear the bones snap under the strain. It only took a moment to realize that if the man had both hands on his new attacker, he must have dropped the knife. Yes, there, in the ruins of the lean-to, the blade caught the flash of lightning. And before the thunder could crackle and detonate, Ramon was scrambling forward, hand outstretched. The worn leather grip felt warm in his palm. The man was shrieking something, the same syllables over and over. It took Ramon a moment to realize that he was saying, "Kill it! Kill it! Kill it! Kill it!" He didn't pause to think. He simply moved, his body knowing what it intended. He lunged forward, the knife in his right hand, and punched it hard into the man's belly. Then, twice more, to be sure. They were pushed together like lovers before Ramon pulled himself away, the man's bearded cheek rasping against his own, the man's breath panting against his face, rich with the earthy smell of decay. For a second, he could feel the man's heart hammering against his own breast. Then he stepped back. The man's face had gone white, his eyes as round as coins. The same look of surprise on his face, the look he'd seen on the European's face. "This can't be happening to me. Not to me." The Sahel, as if repelled by the blood, dropped from Ramon's twin to land in a coil at their feet. "Pinche puto," the man said, and dropped to his knees. The raft shuddered. Sheeting rain mixed with the blood pouring down the man's face, belly, and legs. Ramon stepped back and squatted. The Sahel shifted, as if considering each of them in turn, but it made no move to attack. "You're not me," the man gasped. "You're never going to be me. You're a fucking monster." Ramon shrugged, not arguing. "You got anything else you want to say? Talk quick." His twin blinked as if he was crying, but who could see tears in all the rain? "I don't want to die," the other whispered. "Please, Jesus, I don't want to die." "No one does," Ramon said gently. His twin's face shifted, hardened. He gathered himself, raised himself up a bit, and spat full in Ramon's face. "Fuck you, asshole," the other rasped. "Tell them I died like a man." "Better you than me, cabron," Ramon said, ignoring the spittle running down his face. Chapter 24. Ramon's twin sank down, his eyes focused on the angels, or on whatever it was dying men saw. Something Ramon couldn't see anyway. His mouth went slack, and blood rushed through his lips and down over his chin. Was there the faintest of tugs as the other died, as whatever bond was between them broke? Or was it just his imagination? It was impossible to say. Ramon rolled the body to the edge of the raft and pushed it into the water. His twin's corpse bobbed once, twice, and then slid beneath the water. He wiped the dead man's spit from his face with the back of his palm. The storm was pushing the little raft one way and then another, and Ramon couldn't say how much of his nausea was from the unpredictable spinning and shudders of the craft, how much from the death of his other self, and how much from the loss of his own blood. The Sahel snaked across the raft, its pale flesh reminding Ramon of a worm now, more than a snake. Its wires sparked, but did not turn to him. "We got a problem, you and me?" he asked. But the alien thing didn't respond. He hadn't known that Manek could send the Sahel out to operate on its own. or perhaps my neck was controlling it from a distance somehow. Either way, it was more versatile than he'd thought. My neck must have launched it after them as soon as he'd freed the chupacabra from it. Ramon let out a long sigh and considered his wounds. The cut across his side was serious, but it hadn't gone so deep that he had to worry about a collapsed lung. That was good. His leg, he discovered, had also been pierced at some point. He remembered something from the beginning of the fight. It was a little hard to recall the details. The wound bled freely, but it was superficial. He'd be fine. He could feel the adrenaline dissipating. His hands were shaking, the nausea growing worse. He was surprised to find himself weeping, and more surprised than that to find the tears had their source not in exhaustion or fear, or even the release that came after a bad fight. The sorrow that possessed him was profound. He mourned his twin, the man he had once been. His brother, and more than brother, was gone, and gone because he himself had killed him. Perhaps it had been fated to end this way. The colony had room for only one of them, and so either he or his twin had had to die. His dreams of slipping away, becoming a new man, had just been that. Dreams. And now, like the body of the man he'd killed, they slipped away. He was Ramon Espejo. He had always been Ramon Espejo. He had never had a real hope of being anyone else. He unwrapped the sodden robe from his arm slowly. His awareness of the pain was growing. His pierced side was the most pressing issue. He could hold the robe against it, maybe stanch the bleeding. He wondered whether it would help if he wrung the cloth out first. He tried to guess how far he was from Fiddler's Jump and medical help. And what, he asked himself, would they find when they looked at him? Had Manek and his people left any surprises for the doctors? Even awash in his grief and uncertainty and pain, some part of Ramon's mind must have anticipated the attack. It was no more than a flicker in the corner of his vision. The Sahel lashed out at him, thrusting, spear-like. He didn't think. The blade was simply where it needed to be at the instant it needed to be there, the human-made steel impaling the alien flesh just inches below the wires at the thing's head. Ramon's heart didn't race. He didn't even flinch. He was too tired for that. The Sahel let out a long, high whine. The spark blackened the tip of the knife where it protruded through the thing's thin body. Snake-like, the Sahel thrashed, pulling Ramon one way and then the other with its throes. He drove the blade's tip into a branch, pinning the Sahel to the wood. The flesh below the blade was pale and thrashing violently. The wires and mucous membrane that had once burrowed into Ramon's neck were lolling like a dead thing. "If you get back," Ramon said, then forgot what he was doing. His flesh felt as heavy as waterlogged timber. A few breaths later, he remembered. "I did my next job for him, but I'm Ramon Espejo, not someone's goddamn dog. You get back. You tell them that. You and all the rest of them can go fuck yourselves." If the Sahel understood him, it gave no sign. Ramon nodded and muttered a string of perfunctory obscenities as he jerked the knife free and shoved the snake-like body off the raft. It sank into the water. Only the head was visible as it bobbed away through the rain, first dim, then grayed, then gone. Ramon sat for a moment, the raindrops tapping his back and shoulders. A roll of thunder roused him. "Sorry, monster," he said to the river. "It's just what it is." There was too much to do. He had to pull himself together. He was cold. He was seriously injured and losing blood. He'd lost the oar, and with it, what little steering power he'd had. They'd never gotten any firewood onto the raft, and he didn't have anything left to light a fire with anyway, although he'd need to dry off and warm up once the storm passed. His mind whirled back to the cataract, and the queer peace that had settled over him when he'd been stuck on the rock. The thought related somehow to the dream of being Manek and his trip from Earth with the Enya. He had a sense of something profound coming clear, like recognizing a face once known and then forgotten. When he'd realized he'd fallen asleep and forced his eyes to open again, the rain had stopped, and a wide gold and green sunset was lighting the clouds from below. He heard the chiming call of a flock of flapjacks somewhere far above him. He had to get an oar, something to steer with in case there was another waterfall or rapids. But he'd hear the roar of it if there was one, and his twin owed him a watch anyway. Let the pendejos stay up and keep them safe. Serve the bastard right after he'd blown Ramon off back in the forest. He had wrapped himself in the ruins of the ice root leaves, the wide fronds reflecting his own body's heat back against him, before he noticed the flaw in that plan, and by then he was too comfortable to care whether he died. Days passed in fever. Reality and dream, past and future, knotted together. Ramon found himself possessed by the memory of things that could never have happened, flying like a sparrow over the rooftops of Mexico City with a slat of the alien Eunea in his teeth. Elena, weeping like a baby about his death, and then fucking Martin Casaus on his grave. Trekking through the bush with the raft strapped to his forehead. Manek and the pale alien in the pit applauding and throwing a celebratory party for him. All hail Ramon Espejo, hero of monsters. Both of them wearing silly, cone-shaped party hats and blowing noisemakers. His consciousness vibrated, split, and reformed like a bubble rising through turbulent water. In his rare moments of lucidity, he drank the fresh, clear water of the river and tended as best he could to his wounds. The cut on his ribs was scabbing over, but his leg had the hot, angry look of infection. He would have considered reopening the wound in case there was some foreign body, wood or cloth or Christ alone knew what, that was keeping him from healing. But sometime during his fever dreams, he'd lost the knife. Maybe it had washed over the side, and he no longer had anything he could use to operate. One time, when he woke in mid-afternoon, he felt so strong and well, he imagined he might be able to catch a fish to eat. But just going to the raft's edge to drink had exhausted him. One night, little girls sailed overhead, but the moon had Elena's face, peering down at him disapprovingly. "I told you a chupacabra would get you," the moon said. On another night, or was it later the same night, he saw La Llorona, the crying woman, walking the riverbank, luminescent in the darkness, wringing her hands and wailing over all the children who had been lost, her grief endless and inconsolable. Another time he had caught up on a sandbar and spent the better part of a day wondering how he might get the raft loose in his weakened state, before realizing that he was wearing clothes, his shirt, his field jacket, and was therefore still asleep and dreaming. He woke to find the raft still well in the middle of the wide, now placid river. Most unnerving, though, were the voices in the water. Manek, his twin, the European, Liana. Even when he was fully awake, he could hear them in the clicking and murmuring of the water, like a conversation in a nearby room whose words he could almost make out. Once he thought his twin was screaming, "Madre de Dios, help me! Help me! Please, Jesus, I don't want to die!" The worst was when he heard Manek laughing. The small, still part of his mind that could sometimes watch the rest and evaluate it understood all of this. The hallucinations, the burning thirst strong enough to motivate even a man lost in the ruin of his own mind, the swelling and reddening leg. Ramon was in trouble, and there was nothing he could do to save himself. He was too disorganized in his thoughts to manage even the simplest of prayers. Twice, he felt himself drifting off into a strange twilight sleep. Both times he managed to will himself back to awareness, death retreating perhaps halfway to shore. After all, Ramon Espejo was a tough son of a bitch, and he was Ramon Espejo. Still, when the third time came, as it inevitably would, he didn't think he could pull himself back again. The Enya ships remained his only companions, no longer hawks, carrion crows and vultures. They hung in the sky, watching him, waiting for him to die. When he heard unfamiliar voices gabbling, high-pitched and excited as monkeys, he thought at first that this was some new phase of his deterioration. It wasn't enough that he imagined voices he knew. Now the whole Sao Paulo colony would escort him down to hell, babbling in tongues. The fishing boat cutting through the water, moving slow to keep its wake from swamping his raft, was a new dream. The rust-proof paint, white and gray, but decorated with a rough image of the Virgin, was a nice touch. He wouldn't have thought his mind capable of such lovely detail. He was trying to make the Virgin wink at him when the raft tilted beneath him. A man knelt at his side, his skin as black as tar, his eyes wide with concern. A yaki was too much to hope for, Ramon thought. But I always thought Jesus would at least look like a Mexican. "He's alive!" the man shouted. Spanish had not been his first language, and whoever taught it to him had a distinct Jamaican accent. "Call Esteban! Hurry! And get me a line!" Ramon blinked, tried to sit up, and failed. There was a hand on his shoulder, gently pushing him down. "It's okay, muchacho," the black man said. "It's okay. We've got you. Esteban's the best doctor on the river. We'll get you taken care of. Just don't try to move." The raft thudded again, shifting on the breast of the water. Something else happened. Time skipping like he dropped acid, and he was on a stretcher, with his robe lying over him like a blanket, rising up the side of the boat. The painted Virgin at his right winked as he went past. The deck stank of fish guts and hot copper. Ramon craned his head, trying to make out something, anything that could tell him for certain that this was real and not another artifact of a dying brain. He wet his lips with a sluggish tongue. A woman, 50-ish, gray-haired, with an expression that said nothing could surprise her, sat on the deck beside him. She took him by the wrist, and he tried to grasp her. She turned his wooden fingers aside, holding him firmly still as she took his pulse. Overhead, the Enya ships blinked in and out of existence. The woman made a disapproving sound and leaned forward. It occurred to him for the first time that he'd reached Fiddler's Jump. His first reaction was relief, so profound it approached religious awe. The second was an unfocused, suspicious anger that they might steal his raft. "Hey," the woman said again. He didn't know how often she'd said it, only that this wasn't the first. "Do you know where you are?" He opened his mouth, frowning. He had known, just a moment ago, but it was gone. "Do you know who you are?" That at least was worth a chuckle. She seemed pleased by his reaction. "I am Ramon Espejo," he said. "And, hand to God, that's all I can tell you." Part 4 Chapter 25 Ramon Espejo awoke, floating in a sea of darkness. The tiny lights, green and orange, red and gold, that blinked or flickered around him, illuminated nothing. Ramon tried to sit up, but his body rebelled. Slowly, he became aware of the machines around him, the pain in his flesh. For a muzzy, half-sleeping moment, he was certain that he was back in the strange caverns beneath the mountain, back in the vat where he'd been born, swimming again in that measureless midnight ocean. He must have cried out, because he heard the soft, fast sound of human footsteps, and a cheap white LED light blinked on. He tried to lift his arms against the sudden brightness, but he found himself tangled in the thin tubes that were penetrating his flesh like a half dozen Sahels. And then there were hands on his wrists, human hands, guiding him back down to the bed. "It's okay, Señor Espejo. It's all right." The man had to be near 50. Short gray hair, in tight curls, and a smile that looked like the aftermath of sorrow. He wore a nurse's smock. Ramon squinted, trying to see him better, trying to see the room better. "You know where you are, sir." "Fiddler's Jump," Ramon said, surprised by the gravel in his voice. "Good guess," the nurse said. "They brought you down from there about a week ago. You want another try? You know what this building is?" "Hospital," Ramon said. The nurse turned to look at him more directly. It was as if he'd said something interesting. "You know why you're here?"
"I got fucked up," Ramon said. "I was on a raft. I was prospecting up north. Things went bad on me."
"That's pretty good. Up to now you've been saying that you were swimming underwater, hiding from baby killers. You keep this up, I'm telling the doctors that you're oriented."
"Diego Town? I'm in Diego Town?"
"Have been for days," the nurse said. Ramon shook his head, vaguely surprised to find an oxygen tube stuck under his nose and hissing softly. He reached up and started to pull it off.
"Señor Espejo, don't! You shouldn't take that off, sir."
"I gotta get out of here," Ramon said. "I can't stay in here." The man took his wrist, his grip at the friction point between reassuring and painful. His gaze locked with Ramon's. He was beautiful. Just for being a real person and not some kind of alien, he was beautiful.
"There's no point, Señor Espejo. The constabulary's already been by here twice. If you try to go, I have to call security, and you can't outrun them."
"You don't know that," Ramon said. "I'm a tough son of a bitch." The man smiled, maybe a little sadly.
"We got a catheter running up your cock, Señor Espejo. It's what you've been peeing out of. I've seen men try to pull it out. You'd wind up with a piss tube about as wide as your little finger. You know, until it scars over."
Ramon looked down. The nurse nodded.
"You're gonna be here a while, Ramon. Try to relax and heal up. I'll bring you some fruit gel. You should try to eat a little, okay?"
Ramon rubbed a hand over his face. His beard was thick and wiry, the way it had always been.
"Yeah," he said. "Okay."
The nurse patted his leg sympathetically. He'd probably known a lot of men in his care who had been visited by the constabulary. He might know what was coming better than Ramon did. Ramon lay back against the thin hospital pillow, prepared for a long, anxious night, and fell asleep again before he knew he was fading. He woke to the cool light of morning pressing at the windows. He tried to watch a news feed, but the cheerful, nattering voice of the anchor annoyed him. He made do with the quiet hum of the machines, the distant chiming alarms. He catalogued the aches in his body and wondered what he was going to do. At the start, it had been simple. Get out of town until the Enya came and went and the whole thing with the European had blown over. And then, get free, get back, and raise hell over my neck and its hive in the north. Then get back and remake himself, maybe leave his twin to figure out the whole problem with the police. And now here he was, back in Diego Town, tied down by his penis, and waiting for the constabulary to arrive. Made the Sahel seem dignified. Outside, the city was alive with morning traffic. Vans and transport flyers filled the air, catching the light of the rising sun and reflecting it back into Ramon's eyes like waves flashing on water. The low throb of a shuttle's lift drive announced some traffic sliding up through the thin air to the ships hovering above. Ramon couldn't see the spaceport from his window, but he knew the sound the way men in ages past had known the wail of trains. The knock on his door frame was soft and polite. It said, "I don't have to intimidate you. I don't give a shit if you're scared of me or not. That's how much I own your sad ass." Ramon looked over. The man wore the dark uniform of the governor's constabulary. Ramon lifted a hand in greeting, trailing the IV tube like seaweed. The man who came in was young and strong, wide through the shoulders, strong jaw freshly shaved, with still just a shadow of stubble. He was the man Ramon had imagined chasing him up in the north before he'd known about his twin, the man Ramon had pretended to be when he was on the river. He was a convenient fiction made flesh. "You look a lot better, Señor Espejo," the constable said. "Do you remember speaking with me before?" Ramon plucked at the plastic weave of his hospital gown. Whatever he'd said before didn't count. He'd been out of his pinching mind. If his story didn't match, he could say he'd been dreaming or something. So nothing before counted. "Sorry, Ese. I've been a little fucked up, you know." "Yes," the constable said. "That's why I wanted to speak with you. Do you mind?" Like the fucker would go away if he refused. Ramon shrugged, added another little pain to his list of injuries, and gestured toward the small plastic chair beside the hospital bed. The constable nodded his imitation of thanks and sat on the foot of the bed instead, his weight pulling the mattress toward him. "I was wondering what exactly happened."
"You mean..." Ramon gestured at his ruin of a body.
The constable nodded.
"I got fucked up," Ramon said. "I went out surveying up north. That's what I do."
"I know."
"Yeah. Well, anyway, I was up there, and I landed my van at the river, right by this overhang. I figured it was like shelter, right? So, middle of the night, the fucking thing gives out. Must have been 3 or 4 tons of rock. Knocks my van right into the river."
Ramon slapped his palms together, the needle in his arm tugging at his flesh in a way that was disconcertingly familiar.
"I was lucky to get out alive," he said.
The constable smiled coolly.
"You got in a fight?"
Ramon felt his chest tighten. The heart monitor to his left betrayed him, the blue LED numbers jumping to something just shy of 100. The constable almost suppressed a smile.
"I don't know what you're talking about," Ramon said. "I thought you were here about the accident."
"The accident left knife wounds in your side and your leg," the constable said.
"Why don't you tell me about that?"
"Oh, shit, that..." Ramon said and laughed. "No, man, that's my own dumb fault. I had my knife out of the field kit. It used to make the raft. Anyway, I was trying to cut some vines, and I slipped. Fell right on it. I thought I was dead, you know?"
"So, no fighting."
"Who's out there to fight with?"
Ramon said. The blue numbers were slipping back down. The constable seemed unfazed. "I noticed that the field pack wasn't among the things recovered with you."
"Maybe it fell off the raft. I'm not so clear on those last couple of days out there."
"Can you tell me where your van was when this landslide took it?"
"Nah. It was all logged on the computer. It wasn't the main river, though. It was one of the tributaries."
There might be 100 places that would match the description. Proving Ramon was full of shit just got a whole lot harder. The constable looked peeved. "You could tell him the truth," a small voice in the back of Ramon's mind murmured.
"Tell him about Manek and the Unea, the Sahel and the other Ramon.
You could even give him proof.
You could lead them all right up to that Pinche Mountain and everything under it. They took you prisoner. Tortured you. Almost got you killed.
You don't owe them shit. You've got no reason to lie." Except that the man was a cop, and Ramon was a killer. And besides which, fuck him. The constable coughed, rubbed his chin, The subject was about to change. Ramon took a breath, trying not to do anything that would change the readings on his monitors. No wonder they wanted to question him here and not wait until he could get out. "Do you know a woman named Justina Montoya?" the constable asked. Ramon frowned, looking for the trap in the question. He shook his head. "Don't think so," Ramon said. "Calls herself Keiko? Maybe you know her by that name. She's the governor's secretary. She was showing the ambassador around. Tour guide." Ramon thought of the woman at the El Rey. The European's date. The laughing woman. She'd straighten her hair to look Asian. Maybe she would give herself a stupid name, too. "Don't think so, man," Ramon said. "How about Johnny Joe Cardenas?" "Shit, man, everyone knows Johnny Joe. He's a friend of yours." "He's not anybody's friend. I respect him, like you respect a red jacket, you know." "He doesn't have a very good reputation, does he? I thought it was strange then, when I'd heard that he'd gotten in a fight defending Justina Montoya. He's not the sort of man to do something chivalrous like that." The stink of danger made Ramon's skin crawl. "Defend her from what?" Ramon asked. "Someone try to rape her?" "Maybe," the cop said. "Maybe he would have defended her from that. Even Johnny Joe. There were a lot of people there who said that the guy she was with was pushing it with her pretty hard. A big shot. Made some remarks, twisted her arm when she tried to leave or something. And then Johnny Joe got into it. Maybe saved her." The silence hung between them, pressing. Ramon's neck throbbed where the Sahel had bound him. The monitors chirped and hummed. "He knows," Ramon thought. "They grabbed Johnny Joe so they can show the Enya that they're on top of it. And this pendejo fucking well knows it's a frame. He's waiting for me to fuck up so that they can grab me for it instead. Weird, all right." "Why do you think he'd do something like that?" the constable asked. "Put himself in harm's way to protect a woman he didn't even know." "Come on. Tell me what a hero he was. Tell me how he defended the weak. Tell yourself what a good man you are, and maybe, in the end, you can even let slip that the big man was really you, and not Johnny Joe." Ramon grinned. There was a time he might even have fallen for it. "Man, you can't figure someone like Johnny Joe. You might as well not try, you know? He's like a whole different species." The constable shifted his weight, annoyance flashing in his eyes. "Sorry I couldn't help you out," Ramon said. "I sure wish I knew old Johnny Joe better, you know, so I could help. But we just didn't hang out together much. Maybe the guy just pissed him off, you know? Which was never hard to do. Maybe Johnny Joe just did a good thing for once in his life. Even a badass like him might not like to see some little girl getting slapped around, eh? Especially if maybe he had his eye on her himself." He exchanged level glances with the cop, who was looking sour. "There anything else? 'Cause I'm getting kind of tired." "Maybe later," the constable said. "You were lucky, getting back to Fiddler's Jump. All that happened out there, the van getting destroyed, hurting yourself with the knife like that, it's really unbelievable." "Meaning that you don't believe me?" Ramon thought. "Well, prove something. And then come see me, asshole." "I'm blessed," Ramon said, nodding like a pious idiot drunk on incense and communion wine. "Truly blessed. God ain't done with me yet, you know." "No, he's not." "You take care, Señor Espejo. I'll be in touch if there's anything more I need to ask you." "Anything I can do to help?" Ramon said, almost sorry that the constable was rising from the bed. Ramon liked the feel of winning. There were a few more insincere pleasantries exchanged, and then the constable was gone. Ramon lay back against his pillow and thought his way through it all. They knew that Johnny Joe, for all his failings as a good citizen and an upright human being, hadn't killed the European. He was just the convenient bastard to hang, the scapegoat, and if he was the wrong man, well, shit, at least he deserved it for some other time when he'd killed and gotten away with it. The constable knew it was shit. Hell, the whole colony probably knew it was shit. But what were they going to do? Tell the Enya that they'd screwed up? That they couldn't even catch the right man? That they'd lied? That would be suicide. The investigation was closed. If Ramon didn't open it again for them, and he wasn't about to do that, it would stay closed. Not that the eaters of the young would care, one way or the other. What humans did among themselves didn't matter, because humanity wasn't a species that the Enya cared about, except where they were useful. Impressing them with the colony's sense of law and justice and righteousness was like a pack of dogs trying to impress their catcher by howling in harmony. But the governor didn't know that. And so, perversely, the way that they all failed to understand the aliens around them was going to save Ramon's ass. He might be the next one strung up when a convenient perpetrator was needed to take the fall for something. But this time, for this murder, the government of the colony was going to give him a pass. What else could they do? A weight lifted from him, and he laughed with the relief. His initial plan had worked. He'd been in the wilderness long enough that the problem had solved itself. He was safe now. He could feel it. It was almost 2 weeks before Ramon found out what he'd overlooked. Chapter 26. Ramon walked out of the hospital 8 days later, unsteady on atrophied legs. He wore one of his white shirts and a pair of canvas pants that Elena had brought by one afternoon when he was asleep. The shirt was too big, wide across the shoulders and through the chest, a measure of how badly he had been reduced by his time in the wild and on the river. His new scars ached sometimes if he turned wrong. The Enya ship still hovered high above the planet, but here, among the street vendors and the gypsy boats, the roomy-eyed buskers with almost tuned guitars, and the truant children smoking cigarettes on the corners, the alien ships seemed less of a threat. He'd intended at first to make his way to Manuel Griego's shop. Ramon was going to need a new van. He didn't have the money to buy one outright, and there wasn't a bank on the colony or off that would front him a loan big enough to cover the expense. That left making deals, and Manuel was the one to start with. But his shop was far from the center of the city, at the edge of neighboring Nuevo Janeiro, where most of the Portuguese lived, and Ramon found himself growing tired more quickly than he'd expected. He had no money, and only a temporary emergency identification chit from the hospital. More trivia that he'd have to address in the days ahead. At the moment, it meant that when he sat on the bench at the edge of the park, he could smell the sausages, onions, and peppers cooking on the cart's grill, but couldn't buy any. In a sense, this was the first time he'd seen his adopted hometown. This particular pair of eyes had never looked down these narrow brown streets or at the faded yellow grass of the park. These particular ears hadn't heard the demanding blatting of the urban flatfurs or the tapanos scolding from the tree branches on the edge of the canal like amphibious squirrels. Ramon tried to concentrate on how he felt about that, examining his own soul for unease or some sense of dislocation greater than usual. But what he really felt was tired, impatient, and pissed off that he was too weak to walk to where he wanted to, and too broke to take a fucking pedicab or bus. The obvious place to go was Elena's. He didn't have any place else to sleep, and she'd brought him clothes, so the fight they'd been having when he left was probably forgotten, and she'd have food, and maybe sex if he was up for it. He was half tempted to go to the El Rey first, thank Mikel Ibrahim for keeping that knife away from the police. But then he remembered again that he had no money, and trying to hustle a free beer seemed like a piss-poor way to express gratitude. Ramon took a long, deep breath, nostrils filling with the ozone stench of city air, and heaved himself back up from his bench. Elena's place it was, and with that, Elena. It wasn't a long walk, but it felt that way. When he reached the butcher's shop that squatted below her apartment, Ramon felt like he'd tracked a full day through the underbrush, Manek at his side. He wondered, as he made his way up the dingy, dank-smelling stairs, what Manek would think of this wide, flat human hive that lay open to the sky. He thought the alien would think it naive, like Kiki, grazing in a meadow where a chupacabra was sunning itself. The Enya ships stuttered in and out of existence high above, vanishing only for a moment before returning. At the top of the stairs, Ramon punched in the code, hoping that Elena hadn't changed it in a fit of pique when he'd slipped out on her, or, if she had, that she'd changed it back. And when the last number shifted the status light to green, the bolt clicking audibly and the hinges hissing as the door swung open, Ramon knew he'd been forgiven. Elena wasn't home, but the cabinets were stocked with food. Ramon opened a can of black bean soup, one of the self-heating kind, and ate it with a beer. It tasted of the heating element, but not so much that he didn't enjoy the meal. The couch smelled of old smoke and cheap incense. The afternoon light showed all the dirt on the windows. Skittlings scurried across the ceiling. The charnel stink of the butcher's shop tainted the air. Ramon lay back on the couch, his limbs heavy. He let his eyes close for a moment and opened them again in panic. Something had him, strangling him, pulling him off the ground. Ramon had cocked back a fist, ready to kill the alien, or his twin, or the Sahel, or the Chupacabra, or the cop, before his muzzy brain recognized the shrill squealing. Not an alarm, not a battle shriek. Elena, delighted. "Fuck," he breathed, but softly enough that even with her head pressed against his, she didn't seem to hear him. The threat of violence passed. Elena pulled back from him, her eyes wide, her mouth in a little knot, like she was trying to make her lips look like a baby doll's. She wasn't bad-looking. "You didn't tell me you were getting out," she said, half accusing, half pleased and surprised. "They didn't tell me for sure until today," Ramon lied. "Besides, what were you going to do? Miss work?" "I would have, or I could have got someone to come get you, fly you home." "I can walk," Ramon said with a shrug. "It's not far." She put her hand around his chin, jiggling his head like he was a baby. Her eyes were merry. It was an expression he knew, and his poor, abused penis stirred slightly. "Big macho guy like you doesn't need any help, eh? I know you, Ramon Espejo. I know you better than you do. You're not so tough." "I cut off my own finger stump," he didn't say, in part because it hadn't exactly been him, and in part because there wasn't any point in telling her anything. It was Elena, after all. Batshit crazy, even if she was in her good place right now. He couldn't trust her. Not any more than she could trust him. Whatever meaning she attributed to his silence, it wasn't what he was thinking. She smiled, shifting her body from side to side. "I missed you," she said, looking up at him through her eyelashes. Ramon felt a twinge of pain in his groin and stepped back. "Jesus Christ," he said. "They only took that thing out of my cock a few days ago, woman. I'm not healed up down there yet."
"Yeah?" she said. "That hurts? What about this?"
She did something very pleasant, and it did hurt, only not enough to tell her to stop. The next few days were better than Ramon had expected them to be. Elena was away at work most of the day, leaving him to sleep and catch the news. At night, they screwed and listened to music, and watched the half-assed telenovelas they made down in Nuevo Janeiro. He made himself walk as long as he could, never straying too far from the apartment in case the weakness came on quickly. His strength came back faster than he expected. His weight was still down. He looked like a fucking twig. But he was coming back. He was getting better. He told Elena the story, the one he'd made up, over and over. It wasn't long before he half believed it himself. He remembered the roar of the stone as it came down, the shuddering of the van. He remembered racing out into the cool northern night and watching his ride washed into the river. If it hadn't happened, so what? The past was what you made it. The only thing that marred the time was the small voice in his head reminding him of what had really happened and what he had heard and thought. In the early hours of the morning, when Elena was still fast asleep, Ramon found himself waking and unable to fall back into slumber. His mind returned to the realization that his twin could have done better with Elena, that even that sad sack of shit he dropped into the river had been a better man than he made himself out to be. He had meant to break things off with her when he came back, but here he was, drinking her beer, smoking her cigarettes, spreading her legs. When things got bad again, he told himself. No point ending things when they were still good. And, like a ghost, there was Liana. He remembered the way his twin had told the story. All bravado and bluster, none of the real pain, the loss. He was coming to understand better now why it came out the way it had. It hadn't only been to avoid the appearance of weakness before another man. He needed to tell it to himself that way, too. And that was harder for Ramon to do now that he had seen all that he'd seen. He kept meaning to go see Griego, but he never quite got around to it. Almost a week after Ramon had left the hospital, he woke before dawn, haunted by dreams he couldn't remember. He slipped out of bed, pulled on a robe, and as quietly as he could, took Elena's good whiskey from its hiding place behind the kitchen cabinet. It took him 3 drinks and almost an hour to get the courage to open a link to the city directory and search for her. But there she was, Liana Delgado. Still a cook, but at a new place now. Her address was down by the river. He'd probably walked past it 100 times, stumbling back from the bars. He wondered if she'd ever seen him, and if she had, what she'd thought. Elena mumbled something and shifted in her sleep. Ramon killed the link, but the idea that had taken root out there in the wilderness was growing again in the city. He had wanted to be someone new, had been ready to be someone new, start again. So why not now? All the things he had done and suffered could pass away from him just as easily now with his old name and face and self as they might have had his twin lived. It only meant doing the things that needed to be done. Leave Elena. Find a new place for himself, a new van to work with, some other way of being himself. Himself like he'd always been, only better. And then, when he was cleaned up and solid, when he had something in the bank and didn't have to beg off a woman just to keep from sleeping in the Pinche Park, Liana was in the directory. He could call her, or, if he had the balls, go to her house like a schoolboy singing at his lover's window. He was Ramon Espejo, after all. He was a tough son of a bitch. The worst that would happen was that Liana would turn him away, and if it broke his heart, so what? He was strong enough to make a new one, a better one. In the next room, Elena yawned and stretched. Ramon took one last clandestine pull at the whiskey bottle and silently returned it to its place, rinsing the glass out before slipping